Welcome to the Educate to Advocate podcast.
I'm April Tate, mom of two, founder of Drops of Hope, and a special education advocate.
I am Dr. Penny Stack, occupational therapist and founder of Dyslexia Center of Tulsa, where we provide team-based therapy to bring children to grade-level reading. Hey, let's share with everyone why we're doing the podcast.
I'm here to connect with listeners so that we don't feel alone in the process of helping our children.
I'm here to broaden awareness for providers that learning difficulties are not just about learning issues or needs. It is about a person's lived experience.
Let's get into today's topic. So today we are looking at the Individuals with Disability Education Act, also IDEA is how it's often referred to. And we are looking at the 13 disability categories covered under IDEA. So IDEA requires public schools to provide special education and related services to eligible students. Not every child who struggles is qualifies or eligible for these services, which I think is difficult for parents.
So expand just a little bit on what that means, because when you described it to me, I'm like, oh, that is different than what I perceived.
Yeah. So basically, to receive services under IDEA, a child has to have their school performance has to be adversely affected by whatever the disability is that they have. So for example, they could have ADHD and have no real impact. Maybe they're medicated and their medication is working really well for them, and we're not seeing the adverse effect on their education. And when that happens, a lot of times they don't qualify under their disability category.
Or you could have somebody who has a diagnosis of dyslexia. Mm-hmm. They're getting A's and B's in school.
Yes.
They have been tested by the school and they don't qualify for services because their scores are really high.
Right.
So it does not, according to a quantifiable measure, meaning a numeric measure, doesn't adversely impact their school. What's not taken into consideration is the qualitative evidence of the impact on their life. So even though the parent knows that it's impacting their school, why? Because they're studying 4 hours a day, or right, they're having to take medication or all these other things, that in and of itself does not meet this criteria to fall under IDEA.
Not necessarily. I will say, from my own perspective and having gone down this road several different times, it's really important whenever you're talking to your school psychologist or your IEP team to try and qualify for these services or qualify under these categories, to really communicate well what you see at home, how much time you're spending on that homework that is, you know, showing a successful student. Yes, this student is getting A's and B's at school, but he's working 4 hours a night to do sure. it. And it's not a good balance. And the typical child in school isn't doing that. So your child is the exception. And just, you know, because the school needs to know about that, because there's a sustainability situation there. Like, are you going to be able to do this in eighth grade,
sure,
what you're doing in third grade? Are you going to be able to keep up and still be able to teach that material? So it's really important through this entire process that you really communicate to your team what you see at home and what you're doing at home to keep that child in a successful position. So what we wanted to talk to you about today is there are 13 different categories covered under IDEA. And we just wanted to kind of go through and break these down a little bit so that you as parents can understand. A lot of times when I meet with clients, I'll say, oh, well, what is the category that your child qualifies for? And I would say 90% of them do not know. And so we think there's some value in understanding these different categories. The first category is specific learning disability, also known as SLD. It's an umbrella term and it covers a group of learning challenges. These challenges might affect a child's ability to read, write, speak, reason, do math. And there's several different things that kind of fall into this category, such as dyslexia, dysgraphia. Come on, Penny, let's say this word together.
Dyscalculia.
Hardest word to say. Auditory processing disorder, nonverbal learning disabilities. And it's the most common category under IDEA.
So let's pause here just for a second and break this down for parents just a little bit.
Sure.
So when they are talking about dyslexia, keep in mind that there is a significant amount of research out there that talks about the gap between ability, which is often defined as IQ. Mm-hmm. So an IQ would be average anywhere between, give or take, 85 to 115 would be an average IQ score and range. And that's really impacting their ability to either read, interpret what they're reading, or expression of what they like to say. Dysgraphia focuses on handwriting, difficulties with handwriting, while dyscalculia is focusing on math.
Yes.
You can have one and not the other. Just because you have one doesn't necessarily mean you'll have the other, but you could also have two or three, yes, any combination. So just so there's that increased awareness there. And this is just a side note. If you are concerned about dysgraphia or dyscalculia and you're going in for dyslexia testing, I would request specifically that you would also like testing for dysgraphia or dyscalculia, because providers will often only test for dyslexia unless you specifically ask for the other, and not all providers test dysgraphia and dyscalculia that may be testing dyslexia. So there's a couple of nuances in there. I just want to make sure as parents you're informed on the nuances and how to get services for your child as far as getting the ball going. The only other thing I want to add to this category is if you take a look at Dr. Shavis's work from Yale Center of Creativity and Dyslexia, she talks about the startling statistic that 80% of school children who are categorized under a specific learning disability actually have dyslexia, whether it's diagnosed or not. And when you take a look at the qualifications for a specific learning disability in detail, the characteristics almost line up exactly with dyslexia. Yes. So the funny thing about that statistic, or not funny, but the interesting thing about that statistic, if it is so pronounced, why can we not say the dyslexia word? And why isn't it its own category? Right. And that's for another podcast.
Yes.
But I just want parents to know that if you come with a diagnosis of dyslexia, it will be categorized as a specific learning disability through the school.
Right. And, you know, some of my frustration as a parent is, oftentimes, whenever you get the category of a specific learning disability, you don't get a good breakdown of what it is exactly that the school is seeing with your child. It's just covered under this umbrella term. And in my opinion, whenever something is just covered an umbrella term, it doesn't give credence to what it is.
It doesn't give it ownership. Right. And you may not get the right accommodations or services for your specific need, because they're just going to generalize it,
right,
to meet all of these needs. And some of those opportunities may not be what is most beneficial for your child.
Absolutely.
So then there's other health impairment.
Yes. Other health impairment, also often known as OTI, covers conditions that limit a child's strength, energy, or alertness. We see executive functioning falling under OTI, ADHD, because it impacts attention and alertness. So those are kind of some of the things that we see under OTI. Again, it's an umbrella term. And just keep in mind that what we talked about earlier is if your child has a medical diagnosis of ADHD, but they're not seeing that adverse effect on education, they may or may not qualify for OHI.
And it's interesting because you could have children that have more than one diagnosis.
Yes.
And may qualify for services under a variety of categories.
Mm-hmm. And that there is a category for that, multiple disabilities. But something to just, I mean, an interesting conversation to have, and I don't know if this is really the specific place to have it. But what we're talking about here is this is all education-based. This is not necessarily medical-based. And so while your child might have this medical diagnosis, it might not be accepted educationally, which can be really frustrating for parents. Or we also see sometimes that your child has ADD or ADHD, they have anxiety, they have several different things, and they're medically diagnosed. But whenever you go to the school wants to put it under like an autism spectrum disorder, because the medical definition of autism is different than what you see in the educational setting. So it can be very frustrating for a parent to try and figure these categories out. And with regard to that, I suggest, and I mean, I think it's really important that whenever you look at the child, you see the child as one whole picture. I don't like the idea of a child being, well, in the real world, medically, he has ADHD and anxiety, but in the educational world, he is classified as autistic. I don't really care for that. I like to have, you know, I mean, it's one way to get services if that's, you know, if that's your goal, but I feel like a child should be looked at and everything should agree. I don't feel like there should be this disconnect between what they say in the medical world and what they say at school. I feel like there should be a good, you know, connectivity between the two.
And I just heard you say something that really stood out to me, and it's categorized. And mm-hmm. I know we're talking about categories, and that's why we're using that term. But I've heard parents often say, well, I don't want to have this diagnosis, or I don't want this report to go to the school because I don't want them to categorize him. Yes. I don't want them to know. And I hear what the parent is saying, and I understand they don't want their child to miss out on opportunity, or they don't want a stigma associated with their child that could possibly happen if there's a certain diagnosis. But just another way to view this would be the going to school with a diagnosis and being provided a category may open opportunity for your child to get accommodations or services that would make school just a little more bearable or easier. And that is something that to consider as you're moving forward.
It is.
Because they're struggling.
Absolutely. And coming from a parent perspective, I can say there's a lot of fear wrapped up in these reports and a lot of fear wrapped up in these diagnoses, because you want the best for your child and you don't want them to be put on a specific path. You don't want them to be prejudged. You don't want them, you know, you don't want to start a new school and have this IEP and this categorization and this medical diagnosis and to walk in the door and these people look at you like, oh dear, here we go. So there's some fear wrapped up in that. And I feel like if we educate ourselves and we feel more comfortable with what we're presenting to the school and we work hard to develop those relationships and we build a solid IEP team where we're all working together as a team, I think it's an asset to have. But there's a lot of fear wrapped up in that.
I think the fear is the unknown.
Absolutely.
And so I always hear you say this in almost every podcast. It goes back to relationship building. It all roads lead to the relationship.
To me, it's very important. I feel like once you have a relationship in place, you can gain some comfortability. And when you've got that comfortability, you can have conversations that you couldn't have, you know, 6 weeks ago. Sure. About what's really going to happen to your kid. What does this really mean? And so, again, it's just so important that you just invest in these people, because they're whether they want to be or not, they're investing in your child.
That's right.
Okay. So moving on, the third category is autism spectrum disorder. From an educational standpoint, this covers a wide range of symptoms, but it mainly affects a child's social and communication skills. It can also impact behavior. I think that that's a pretty narrow definition of autism spectrum disorder, but that is that's kind of the definition that we work with in the educational setting. The fourth category is emotional disturbance. This is just various mental health issues can fall under the emotional disturbance category. This can include things like anxiety, educational anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, depression. And some of these may also be covered under other health impairment. But this category just covers a bunch of different various mental health issues that adversely affect the child's education. We have next, the fifth category is speech or language impairment. And this just covers all kinds of difficulties with speech or language. It could be stuttering, pronouncing words, making sounds with a voice. It could also be recall of words. It covers language problems that make it hard for kids to understand words or express themselves, which to me, this is really funny because I feel like it's kind of gray, and it could also be covered under autism spectrum disorder because it's communication skills and sociability up here with autism spectrum disorder, but down here in speech and language impairment, it is also
and then we took a look at the first category, specific learning SLD, specific learning disability, where it says auditory processing disorder or non-verbal learning disability. That can somewhat overlap with autism spectrum.
It can.
It can also overlap with dyslexia. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of characteristics that overlap with a variety of either medical diagnoses or learning diagnoses. And to be able to tease out where that comes from and what category is most appropriate for your child, I think is where the conversation really kind of has to dig deep.
Absolutely.
Because I think the category is important because it helps drive what services that you'll receive. So understanding, first of all, what are the possible options? And then what would it look like if they were under this category versus another? Is that conversation that you have with the team?
Absolutely. And then, you know, just, and that's another reason why it's so important to have those deep conversations. I feel like whenever you're going through this process, because there are so many kids that are going through this process and because our resources are so limited, I feel like just as preservation goes, you know, the school is trying to do this as quickly as possible. Sure. And they're trying to, you know, cover a lot of kids. They're trying to get a lot of kids help. This is, you know, I mean, this is no fault of their own. There's just a resource problem right there. And as a result, a lot of times things get skimmed over unless you really push it and really say, this is what I'm seeing at home, and make that very clear to them. And even what you're seeing whenever they're doing schoolwork to kind of help put them in the right category is really important. And the sixth category is visual impairment, which includes blindness. This covers children who have eyesight problems and are considered to have a visual impairment. It includes blindness, partial eyesight. If eyewear can correct the vision problems, then it doesn't qualify. So there is that. But basically, whenever children have these problems, if there's partial blindness, or if there's corrective vision issues, then a lot of times we can get them a accommodation just to get them preferential seating so that they can see the board or they can see the teacher much easier. So there is that. The seventh category is deafness. Kids with a diagnosis of deafness fall under this category. These are kids who can't hear most or all of the sounds, even with a hearing aid. Hearing impairment refers to a loss of hearing that is not covered by deafness. This can be something that changes over time. It can be hard of hearing. It is not the same thing as having, being hard of hearing is not the same thing as having trouble with auditory or language processing, which I think is really important to note. And then we have the ninth category, which is deaf and blindness. Kids with this diagnosis have severe hearing and vision loss. Their communication and other needs are really unique, and because of that, they qualify under this particular category. Then we have orthopedic impairment. My words aren't coming easily to me today. An orthopedic impairment is when a kid lacks the function and ability in their bodies. When I was reading, they put cerebral palsy under this particular category.
Yeah, I find that really interesting because cerebral palsy is a neurological,
right?
You know, it starts because, you know, you've got something going on neurological in the brain, which as a overflow of that, you may have limited movement in your joints. And so I get the impression from this category that they're categorizing it based on I'm trying to think of the right word here. So when you think about orthopedic impairment and the example of cerebral palsy, it makes me think they're not really considering the cause of it. They're really looking at what's the residual effect, right? What has it left you with? And so in this case, some people experience limited ability to move their joints or to move them in a smooth manner, and hence you have the orthopedic impairment
right
category.
The 11th category is intellectual disability, and this is a category where they have kids that have a below average intellectual ability. We looked this up before we started
right
this, and just generally speaking, IQ scores below 70 or 75 usually show cognitive disability. And I think that kind of varies slightly by what you're reading, but somewhere in the 70, 75 category and below.
And I just want to pause right there for a minute and go back to dyslexia. And so I think a lot of individuals, when they work with individuals who have dyslexia, feel that if they just try harder, and I hear a lot from parents, but my child's smart. I hear that word all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, my child's smart. And I find that word very interesting because in order to be diagnosed with dyslexia, like I said earlier, your IQ has to be average or above, which would be somewhere between 85 and 115. And the reason they have that benchmark there is because if their IQ is below average, they're not sure if their learning differences or ability to read or process is due to dyslexia or that other cognitive impairment. And that's why I think these are appropriately done in two separate categories.
Right.
Because just because you have dyslexia does not mean you don't have the capability to learn at the rate of your peers.
Exactly.
It looks like they may be struggling, but if you put them in a different scenario, they're right up there with their peers.
Yeah.
Right. So where if you have somebody who has an intellectual disability, they may struggle keeping up with their peers even in different scenarios.
Right.
And so that's the difference between the two.
Definitely. These kiddos might also have poor communication, self-care, and social skills. Down syndrome is one example of an intellectual disability. Another category 12, is traumatic brain injury, which I think is really interesting. I've represented a client with a traumatic brain injury, and it's just very specific to that particular kid. A brain injury is caused by an accident or some kind of a physical force and has left deficits in their cognitive abilities.
Right. So I want us to think about other types of traumatic brain injuries that I don't think people really take into consideration. Those are concussions.
Yes.
So it's whenever you have impact to the brain, that part of the cell that dies, it does not regenerate.
No.
It does not come back. It does not get better. What happens is the brain's plasticity or ability to compensate finds another part of the brain that can kind of recoup what that function was that was lost. So I find what's interesting about concussions is the frequency in terms of how close they might be together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the isolation that someone may have had four or five concussions, is did they have four or five concussions in 1 month? So
right.
I think about football, I think about soccer,
mm-hmm.
and slight things, headaches, fatigue, nausea and vomiting, these are all to be taken very seriously. And that is a traumatic brain injury in a sense. I'm not necessarily saying if you have a concussion, you're automatically going to be
right.
qualified under these criteria, but I want our listeners to understand that they can add up. They are a brain injury of some sort. And if they continue, they can cause permanent damage over time.
They can. I actually have a personal story that I can share about this. Last year, I was on vacation with my husband, and I went to step up on a wall, and it wasn't a huge wall. It was like a 2.5-3 foot wall, and something happened. We're still not sure, but I passed out in stepping up, and whenever I did, I just fell completely backwards, right on my head on the sidewalk on the cement, passed out. All of this craziness ensued. And, you know, I was rushed to the hospital, MRIs, you know, all of the things. And then I came home and, you know, there was some healing time that had to happen. But as I'm getting farther out from that specific injury, I notice things that I haven't ever had a problem with before. Word recall has really become something that I've noticed that I struggle with. And I know everybody says this, but I lose my phone 70 times a day, and I didn't do that before. So I'm starting to see little cognitive things pop up that concern me, that I need to go see someone and get some help with. But these are the things that can happen whenever you have a traumatic brain injury. You don't have that recall that you did before, and it's alarming.
Sure. So you have these residual experiences because of the concussion. And so it may not be to the extent that you qualify for
sure.
an IDA category. However, a lot of schools have concussion protocols.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of schools don't have school nurses, and a lot of parents don't even know that these exist in the school. So go to the athletic director. They're typically the staff and personnel at your child's school who will implement these concussion protocols. And they work with all the faculty or the teachers. They may start you on staying home for a while. They may start you back half days. They may allow you to go somewhere in a nice low-lit room to right. take a nap. And so all of these things are important in the recovery process of transitioning back into school.
Absolutely. And then we have our final category, which is the multiple disabilities. And this is just a child that has more than one condition covered by IDEA. Having you know, multiple issues creates an educational need that can't really be met under one specific category. So I feel like that's a pretty comprehensive look at the 13 different categories of
IDEA.
Yes, IDEA. Thank you. I told you, my word recall.
Yeah. Case in point.
It's real.
I think some of the takeaways from today that I got was the fact that there are so many categories. Some of the qualifiers for each category sort of overlap, which is something that you'd have to kind of tweeze out with the school and with your healthcare provider and try to bring the two together to see what's best for your child. But it's worth pausing and just becoming aware of these different categories so you can advocate for your child's best needs and interests.
Absolutely. And I mean, just for parents in general, it's a little bit vague sometimes and a little bit blurry. And so, you know, definitely dive into that conversation with your team. Again, I hope that we leave you feeling empowered today to advocate. And thank you for making us a small part of your day.
We'd love to hear from you and what is on your mind. Email us your questions and comments at educate2advocate@gmail.com. Listen for your topic to be on a future podcast.
Connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Subscribe and listen to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Alexa, and on most podcast platforms. Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Alexa, and on most podcast platforms.